Today, we are looking at access to green space, or lack thereof, which affects every Georgian in one way or another. With us is Venice Jennings. She's a biological scientist at the U.S. Forest Service in Athens. And we're going to explore communities around the state and figure out how they're trying to help everyone be healthier and check in with a few of them now. John Bennett is executive director of the Savannah Bicycle Program. Savannah Bicycle Campaign. And he's joining us from the GPB studio in Savannah. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
So what is the Savannah Bicycle Campaign?
People always ask us, what are you campaigning for? And our general goal is to make Savannah safer and friendlier for people who ride bikes, whether they're doing so for transportation or recreation.
So what does that mean? Do you creating roadways, you access to bicycles? What are you doing?
We work in a lot of different areas, all that conveniently begin with E. So encouraging people to ride through organizing events. And people always ask, how fast do your rides go? And they go exactly as fast as the slowest person on them. So we want people just to get out and ride. We work on enforcement to make sure traffic regulations are being enforced, working in engineering to get more bike lanes, paths, sidewalks, multi-use paths. Also, we do a lot of work with education to teach children and adults how to operate their vehicles, whether their bikes or, in the case of adults, drivers, to operate them safely. And we do evaluation. We actually do bike census counts. So I stand on a corner in Savannah with volunteers every fall, and we count people on bikes going by. And then finally, there's an equity component. We have a campaign or a program where we take donated bikes and volunteers recondition them, and then we give them away to people who need bikes to get to work or to school or to other destinations.
So this is not a bike share. How are you funded?
We are a membership organization. We receive some grants, and we are scrounging for pennies everywhere we can get them, to be honest.
Well, Savannah's a pretty good city for biking. It's pretty flat, right?
We've done an excellent job of keeping the ground flat, so that's something I'm proud of. And it makes it so that in Savannah, people of all ages and abilities can ride bikes, and that's not true in other parts of the state. So naturally, we have an area where people can make bicycling a healthy part of their daily lives if we provide infrastructure that makes them feel safe and comfortable while doing so.
Well, this is a big problem for cycling everywhere, but I've heard it particularly in some areas of the South. Safety, drivers not necessarily used to sharing the road with cyclists. Are there any kind of laws or provisions on the books about how that should be done?
Well, Georgia does have a 3-foot passing law that requires you, if you're operating a car, to leave at least 3 feet when you're overtaking or following a cyclist. So people, I do lots of presentations and I ask who's aware of that. And I can say that with every passing year, more hands go up. But people need to recognize that when you see someone on a bicycle on a street, they are legally entitled to be there. And they may not just be out there having fun. They may be trying to get to work just like you. So we encourage everybody to realize that bicycles belong on the streets and they're used not just for recreation, but transportation too.
So you have to, if you're getting dedicated bike lanes, for example, you have to work with the cities and towns. How difficult or easy is it to get the city on board with these kind of initiatives?
We've had some great partnerships, and one of the things we realize is this is going to sound strange, but try to take the bicycle out of the equation a little bit. So we've had great luck with organizations like the Coastal Georgia Indicators Coalition, which tracks the amount of green space, the amount of active transportation infrastructure, such as bike lanes and sidewalks, and let people recognize that all of these types of infrastructure are good for you whether you ride a bike or not. So a lot of people don't imagine themselves as bicyclists, and I'm on a mission to change that, but even if you're not, better sidewalks, trails have public health benefits, as we heard early in the show, but economic, social as well. So even people who don't ride bikes benefit from all these types of things.
Well, Vernice, this is part of your area of expertise, the social interactions, the big whole picture. Mm-hmm. Getting people to share the road is a pretty is a pretty difficult thing, especially because there's so much pressure on the roads and so many drivers. Talk about the whole, pulling back that picture, the whole social interaction of how people get around, how they use the land in the cities they live in.
Well, again, that isn't my particular area of expertise, but when it comes to spaces and sharing these spaces and mobility, I think that's an important piece to consider. And there has been research talking about some of those very points in the sense of these spaces help others feel welcome and being able to move from place to place and have a say in their experience, residential experience.
Well, and access is another thing that you have certainly looked at. But the idea of what John is doing, he's refurbishing bicycles and giving them to people in Savannah who don't have another mode of transportation. How does that affect, you know, just being able to access, get out there, how does that affect people's well-being and how they interact with the world?
Well, again, that I haven't done a particular study on that, but I think when it comes to the opportunity of equity in the sense of having access to a bike or other resources to promote health beneficial activity, that's something to consider.
Well, John, what's your vision for the future of Savannah Bicycle Campaign? Does this campaign have a finish line or, an election?
No, and the Russians will not be involved. I'm determined to make that happen. But we are working not just for bikes, but for people who walk, too. And in Savannah, bike lanes are used by people who use wheelchairs, people who are pushing strollers. So it's not so much about the bike as it is transportation options. And in a lot of communities, the Beltline, for example, was an abandoned rail corridor. We don't have very many of those here, but we do have canal banks. So we've been working with organizations such as the East Coast Greenway Alliance and the Savannah Development and Renewal Authority to identify potential to activate some of these existing facilities for use for neighborhood connectivity, helping people reach recreational destinations or that they serve as recreational destinations on their own.
Well, John, thanks so much. Now we're going to move on to Macon, where Danny Glover, not that Danny Glover, is founder of One South Community Development Corporation, Macon's first urban agrihood. Good morning, Danny.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well. So tell me what an agrihood is.
All right. So one correction, we'll be Georgia's first urban agrihood that's located in Macon, Georgia. But basically, agrihood is a concept that was developed in Detroit, Michigan, by a guy named Tyson Gersh. He's a part of the Michigan Urban Farming program. So I had a chance to meet and have a couple tours with Tyson a few years ago and moved back home after working on the campaign trail and launched this project. So basically what we're doing, we're taking blighted properties within my home neighborhood, properties that have abandoned houses, overgrown lots and stuff of that nature. And we're converting that to active farm space, about an acre and a half right now. And on that farmland, we're going to have farm space for growing, but we're also building an urban agrihood concept, whereas we'll have a food farm-to-table restaurant, we'll have commercial kitchen space for cooking demonstrations, and just creating a place within our neighborhood, but also solving a long-term neighborhood issue, which is access to healthy and fresh produce, which is constantly being...
But this is something that Mario mentioned to us as well for building resilience. But gardening, long tradition in Macon and Middle Georgia forever. And you grew up near Bowdoin Street, which is where one of your developments are. How has Macon changed during your life in terms of access to things like fresh produce and green space for activities?
Yeah, Macon has changed a lot. Like the neighborhood I'm from, Knott Street and Bowdoin Street, it's a neighborhood of residents who migrated from rural Georgia, in the 40s and 50s, and when through that migration. They brought the recipes, they brought the histories, they brought the skill sets of how to garden and tend to the land. So what you find in that neighborhood is, the past remnants of small household gardens. Like my grandmother had a garden and that's how I was introduced to the whole process. Now, granted, at 5 and 6 and 8 and 9, I may not have been so enthused to get out there and weed it and put in that sweat equity. But later in life, I learned that, those skills are really been used to rebuild a neighborhood and also, improve our quality of life. So the history is already there and we're just re-tapping into it.
There are a number of food deserts reportedly in Macon. So what is that like? What are the consequences for residents?
So the consequences are dire. I mean, in my particular zip code, 31201, is one of Georgia's most distressed food insecure areas in the state. In that one zip code, you have most of all of the county's public housing projects. There are extreme cases of high poverty. There are extreme cases of violence. So all of the elements in which lead to unhealthy life outcomes exist within that zip code. So, you know, you have parents, you know, who stay in Bowden homes, you know, don't have access to a car. Kroger just closed recently. So the closest one, which was about 5 to 6 miles away, just closed, and it wasn't as accessible on the bus. So now, you know, they just have to figure it out. Now they have to make a choice between going to a local neighborhood store with, you know, with produce and meat that's not as fresh as the Kroger would offer, you know, with no other options. So, you know, we're hoping to fill that gap. You know, we're hoping to decimate that zip code's a food desert. And we're excited about the project.
So, Venice, Danny's talking about Macon changing, the city changing access. How about access to, you know, forests or lack of forests contribute to a whole revitalization project in cities?
I think there have been an ingredient in that process, but I think he also brought up a number of other issues that we have to keep in mind, that parks and green spaces are only one variable of a much larger health equation that can include issues such as crime and housing and social economic status. So it's a part of the process, but we also have to be mindful to not make it the entire solution.
Right. Okay. So we want to thank you so much, Danny, for speaking with us from Macon. Appreciate your time and keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Heather Benham is Executive Director of the Athens Land Trust, and she's joining us on the line from Athens. Heather, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us about the Athens Land Trust beginnings. Now, this was back in the 90s. What were its original goals?
Originally, we were founded to protect land from development and to provide affordable housing. Our founders were pretty ahead of the curve in seeing how land use impacts different segments of the community in different ways. So the more land you protect, the more expensive land is, which begins to price people out. So there's a lot of things to take into account when you're looking at land use, and we try to do that here.
Well, Athens Land Trust continues to work on conservation and affordable housing, but one of its newest and most notable missions is community agriculture, which is becoming a theme today. Community agriculture, working the land and having access to it. Tell us about the community or communities your gardens serve.
Yeah, we're in a number of communities around Athens. We have 15 community gardens and then 2 urban farms. And most of our gardens are located either in low-income neighborhoods or at places where people in need are gathering so that there's community being built around the garden.
So what kind of changes have you observed there in Athens as a result of these community gardens?
Yeah, there's several things. One thing I will say, you were talking earlier about the double food stamp program, the double SNAP dollars,
right.
and how many people are utilizing the program. And I would say from the first year we started our farmers market, I thought this is going to take a generation to change. It's going to take so long for people to understand how to cook, how to prepare healthy and fresh food. And I'm glad to say I'm wrong. We're 5 years in, and it has been a massive sea change, I think, in the whole community, recognizing how their health is impacted by what we're eating. So that's one big change.
Well, green space can mean any number of things. We're talking about urban agriculture in this case, farmers markets. Mm-hmm. Why? What does it do for the people there in Athens to have access to this way of connecting with nature and connecting with the land? What do you see there in a place that in many ways was a traditional farming country?
Right. Well, I think one thing, like you've talked about earlier, it's not just about the green space. It's how you're using the land to benefit communities. And so when you're establishing farms or farmers markets or ways for people to increase their income, either by growing food so they're not having to spend as much on it or by creating a business so that they can sell and better support their families or themselves, I think that's where you start to get a lot of buy-in. And then the other thing that we've seen, which it's been pretty magical, is kids. That's the big shift. You know, getting kids outside, we provide first-time job opportunities for a lot of at-risk high school students through our farming programs. And to see kids thrive by being outside and creating a new generation of kids that are connected to the land and want to see it protected and supported, I think that's what's going to change things in the long term. As more communities become urbanized and more people are living in urban areas, if we want to create a new generation of stewards for our land, we got to find ways to benefit everyone with it.
Venice, your thoughts on that gentrification? Let's say farmers markets often associated with gentrifying areas. Do you think that's a safe? It may be a stereotype, but maybe is that a bad assumption?
I'm not sure about that one.
So do you think in gentrifying areas, however, this access to food is going to become a part of the way that people think about where they want to live, where they want to be in the development of these spaces?
Well, there has been an area of research that has linked access to these spaces with residential satisfaction in terms of how you have an attachment to where you live, or as they call in the social sciences, a sense of place. That is important for one's development and overall perception.
And do you think as we're moving forward in, you know, more and more urban spaces being developed in Georgia and the emptying out in many places of, in many parts of the state, of people and population, that this call for more green spaces is going to connect to the sense of need and sense of place for Georgians?
I think there's great potential there. And the panelists this morning have brought up ways in which that connects people to their locations, whether that's in the sense of youth development, which is something that we've also discussed in previous research. Again, how young people connect to these spaces or see themselves as a part of the solution, not only when it comes to land conservation, but how these spaces help their development.
So you think Heather's hitting it out of the park with the kids there?
Hey, she's getting some great traction.
Heather, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
And Venice Jennings, thank you for sticking with us through thick and thin,
putting you
on the hot seat there.
Thank you.
Biological scientists at the U.S. Forest Service in Athens. We also heard from Danny Glover of the nonprofit One South Community Development Corporation and John Bennett, executive director of the Savannah Bicycle Campaign. Thanks to everybody who gave us a little sense of green space on the radio today. I'm Virginia Prescott. Meet you here again tomorrow. On Second Thought is a production of GPB News.